Welcome to Flicks of Doom, the official movie podcast of Geeks of Doom. I'm Empress Eve, and here with me is my little Applejack, Justin Vactor.
Hey!
This week we'll be reviewing the new Bruce Willis film, Red, based on the graphic novel by Warren Ellis. We'll also be bringing you the latest movie news and box office results. Justin, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find us?
All of the places you can find us have to do with the letter X. F-L-I-X, Flicks of Doom, Twitter.com, Flicks of Doom at gmail.com, or you can go into iTunes and search for us, Flicks of Doom, and leave us a review, which will help us out. So all of those are X. And go to geeksofdoom.com.
That's right. Very good. Now, this week in the news, we actually had, I'd say, quite a bit of good news. Why don't you tell us what our first bit of good news is?
Oh, well, it depends on what you define as good, Eve. Peter Jackson finally greenlighting the Hobbit movie?
I would say that's good, wouldn't you?
Sure, Eve.
Really, Justin?
Eve, have you seen a Peter Jackson movie recently? I'm just wondering. What was the last Peter Jackson movie you saw?
Well, I didn't see The Lovely Bones because, I don't know, I felt the content would be too disturbing. Mm-hmm. What was before Lovely Bones?
King Kong.
Okay, I saw that.
And then Lord of the Rings.
I saw all those. See, now this is, you know, essentially the Lord of the Rings universe, which I trust Peter Jackson to do. I mean, who else are you going to trust to do it, right? So I'm fine with it. Like, I'm happy. First of all, I like the fact that how many times were they like, oh, it's not green yet. You know, it's not green lit yet. Oh, we don't know if it's going to happen. Like, give me an effing break, okay? This is a massive cash cow, okay? There is no reason in the world why this movie shouldn't be made. Actually, I should say these two movies, because they're making two movies out of The Hobbit. So it's funny that there have been all these articles for months and months now where it's like, oh, it might not happen. A bullshite, okay? Okay. So now the press release came out where they're saying, okay, it's official. The films have been greenlit. So they're going to start filming February of 2011. And Peter Jackson will direct now that Guillermo del Toro, he had to drop out because of all the delays. So he dropped out and Peter Jackson is in, which, you know, makes sense, I would think. And I'm totally good with this. Justin, how about you?
I'd rather see a Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you'd rather see King Kong Part 2.
No.
What about the King Kong prequel? You want to
King Kong was two movies, Eve. That's how long it was.
It was three movies. Yeah. It was actually three movies. Like, cause in the middle where they go to Jurassic Park. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I don't know about Peter Jackson, Eve.
Really?
I enjoyed the Lord of the Rings films for what they were, but I have not gone back and revisited them.
And really, I have.
King Kong was okay to me, but I haven't seen The Lovely Bones. So I've heard nothing but bad things about it, and it got terrible critical response. Although I won't necessarily base my opinion off of the critical response, but I'm just saying it seems like Peter Jackson, he got a lot of acclaim for the Lord of the Rings movies, but I have not seen, he hasn't earned his status in my mind where people place him. Like, he hasn't had the track record of a Spielberg or a Stanley Kubrick or someone else or a Scorsese that's had just numerous hits.
But he's proven that he can do the Lord of the Rings universe, though. I mean, who would you trust? I mean, I know you said Guillermo del Toro, which I trust him too, but he can't do it. So who else, you know, who else could step in this situation? So, but anyway, but besides it being greenlit, and obviously it had to be, come on now, but there's also the rumors as to who's going to be playing the lead role of Bilbo Baggins, and they have Martin Freeman, his name has come up. He was the lead in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and he's also on the British version of The Office. And then, of course, there's Doctor Who star David Tennant, actually previous Doctor Who star, and Inglourious Basterds Michael Fassbender. All are in, you know, rumored to be in the film. I don't know if they're all up for Bilbo Baggins or they're up for other roles, but I don't know. Michael Fassbender seems a bit too big to be in this movie. I don't know. But All good names, though. All good names. Wouldn't mind seeing them in it.
Yeah, I was just looking in Entertainment Weekly this week, and they have a special feature on kind of classic casts being reunited. So they they had the, it's actually a really good issue. They had the Married with Children cast coming back together. They had the West Wing cast and the Back to the Future.
We did that big article about the Back to the Future reunion from that Entertainment Weekly article.
But they also had the Lord of the Rings guys coming back together. So they had all the Hobbits and Peter Jackson and Ian McKellen and some others, Orlando Bloom. So that was interesting to see all of them coming back together. But yeah, that's something that I'd be interested in seeing, Eve the Hobbit. But I don't know. It doesn't get me excited. Like, just by seeing Peter Jackson's name, it does not excite me.
Well, that's an interesting take. I think you're the first person who has said something like that. I haven't heard anyone else say anything of that nature. So that's pretty interesting, you saying that.
Because I think he's one of those guys that if you have a hit really early in your career, then, you know, your next, it almost feels like you can coast for your next couple movies because you're riding the fame of that original one. So,
So, what else is happening in the news this week?
Marvel is really trying to up their television game, and looks like their first show, live action, is going to be an Incredible Hulk series.
Well, you know, the original Incredible Hulk series was pretty successful back in the 70s, so I'm not surprised that they are going back to that, you know, well. But considering how the two movies that they've done for the Hulk have not really been very well received, well liked, that is surprising that they're like, okay, now we're going to try TV, you know?
Yeah. I'm wondering if they have something. Anytime an announcement like this is made where I question why, I wonder if they know something that we don't know. I'm wondering about the special effects for show like this, where you have to have the Hulk. And are we going to see the Hulk every episode? I'm wondering. And if this is an ABC show, if we're going off of the special effects that I've seen so far in No Ordinary Family, which is a superhero or special effects show on ABC, then I'm very worried about the Incredible Hulk because I have not liked what I've seen so far on No Ordinary Family.
I haven't liked what I've seen of the Hulk, period. I mean, aside from, you know, Lou Ferrigno in green makeup, you know, I haven't liked any incarnation of the Hulk as far as, you know, the computer graphics of it. I don't like it at all. It looks ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't need a TV show that's going to show me, like, silly Hulk every week. I don't really, PlayStation Hulk, I don't need that. So, but I would be interested in story, though. I'd be interested in what they would do with the character, and you know, like, you know, they can make it good. But you're right, it's at this point it's all about the special effects, how that's going to be. And obviously if this TV series is a hit, then they can bring their other characters onto TV also.
Yeah. And I don't know how this is going to work, even from a story standpoint, because I think we're in an age now where anything after The Dark Knight, we're in an age where we want these serious superheroes and dark and brooding. And I don't, the Hulk seems like it works in the 70s, and it seems like a silly character to me, a giant, you know, green guy. Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work on today's television. So that's another thing that I'll be interested to see how it works. Because a lot of times I don't think Smallville, I think Smallville's too silly for TV these days.
But the last few seasons?
Yeah. And especially this current season that's going on right now. But I don't know how it's going to work. But it'll be interesting to see. I kind of had the same fear with Wonder Woman. You know what? Maybe they'll put her in the new Wonder Woman outfit after the 700th or the 600th issue where she has a little more clothes on. But seeing a live action Wonder Woman where she's wearing basically a bikini and boots, like, I don't know how that would work in today's world. So, yeah, just a lot of these superhero shows are silly to me. That's why I'm much more interested in something like The Walking Dead, which feels more real to me.
Yeah, I think the tone of a show like The Walking Dead is what today's audiences want. They want that seriousness, and you know, if you're in a costume and you're on TV, then chances are it should be funny, because if you're gonna try to go serious, it just might not work in this day and age.
I guess that's the advantage the Hulk has, because he doesn't really have a costume.
No, but he's gonna be like a video game. He's gonna look like I have zero faith that it's gonna look good, especially since it's on television.
Yeah, a TV budget.
Yeah, TV budget. And you know, like I said, I don't think it was that good in the movies. Mm-hmm. So how are you gonna do any better on TV?
Yeah, I would say the only way I could see it is if they're doing something like an Avatar type budget. Or they're using Avatar-type technology, then I could see maybe. Because I think I said it on our previous episode where we talked about Avatar. That was the first time where I fully believed that those CG characters were actually real. Right. So, but that's, think about the Avatar budget, though.
Exactly.
To make
that. It was outrageous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't see it on TV anytime soon.
Right.
But maybe they'll focus on Bruce Banner more and make it that type of show. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. Well, we'll have to wait and see. Who knows when this is even going to happen at this point. All right, so we have actually... we were going to go over the Spider-Man casting news, but I thought we should throw in the small little news about Tom Hardy being... he's going to be in the third Batman film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, apparently, I don't think we know yet who he's going to be.
No, they haven't officially announced it, but there's the rumors right now is he's going to be the Riddler, which there's been a lot of people. I mean, the Riddler hasn't even been confirmed to be in the movie, but a lot of people have been speculating. Even since, I remember like the day after The Dark Knight, people saying, oh, yep, next movie, Riddler.
Yeah. Yeah, and Johnny Depp, right? Johnny Depp
was associated. Eddie Murphy was associated with it at one time. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's name was associated with it. There's been a lot of people thrown around for the Riddler. And our own Hunter Camp from geeksofdoom.com, I remember him saying, now, Eve, you don't watch Lost, but there's a character on Lost that Daniel Faraday, the actor who plays Daniel Faraday, I'm sorry, that's who Hunter wanted to play the Riddler. So there's been so many people's names tossed around for that character, but Tom Hardy was an actor who I really enjoyed in Inception, and that was, he's been in previous movies, but Inception, I think, will be his breakout role, and from here on out, we're always going to look back at Inception as being that one that he kind of broke out with. But I'm glad to see him teaming up again with Christopher Nolan, because they had such a good relationship in Inception.
Right.
And I have no doubt that he is the right guy for whatever role they're picking.
Yeah, I wonder what I wonder what they're even going to do to top The Dark Knight at this point. Like, what is going to happen? I mean, the way The Dark Knight ends, you know the way they have to go in the third film. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like Batman Begins was so different than The Dark Knight. I mean, I didn't feel like, it didn't feel like you would totally watching, oh yeah, this is the sequel, like, because The Dark Knight stands on its own so well, and I feel like things were dynamics in the film were changed a little bit, and so now what are you gonna do now? It's like you have Christian Bale coming back as Batman, and then what? Now you're gonna have like all these new people in it, so mm-hmm. I feel like it's gonna be different once again. And will people feel as strongly about Batman 3 as they did about The Dark Knight? I mean, you know, or is The Dark Knight just a phenomenon unto itself? You know, so I really, really wonder how this third film is going to be received at this point. Like, if they don't have someone in this film that connects like the way Heath Ledger did, then I don't know how they're going to pull it off, truthfully. Well, like, they might have to do some stunt casting at this point.
Yeah, I don't know about how well it will be received critically, but if we go back to previous superhero or comic book movies that have gotten to a third installment, anytime the second movie did well, the third movie did even better, just based off of everyone liking the second movie. So they went out and saw the third movie. And then I think that you look at Spider-Man is one example where the second movie is thought of to be the best, but the third movie made a lot more money than
but the third movie sucked.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times in trilogies, the third movie makes the most, but it's based off of people's history of enjoying the first and the second.
Yeah, exactly. Like people. Well, I mean, there's no doubt people will come in droves to see the third film. There's no doubt in my mind. But how will they feel when they walk away? You know, like it. You know how people will go to see The Dark Knight more than once. Like they did. Like even I went back like a few, and I normally don't. Like unless it's Star Wars or. Yeah, unless it's Star Wars, I usually don't go back, like, multiple times. But I know for this, I went back, I don't know, two or three times. And, but the average person did not go back more than once. Like, I know you like to go back more than once, but, you know, the average person, like, I don't know anybody outside of our circle who's like, yep, going back. Like, so, but for The Dark Knight, the average person did go back. That's the thing. Like, they got people to come back. So, have to do the same thing with the third film.
The thing I liked about The Dark Knight was I saw it in IMAX, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to watch it at home the same way I watched it on an IMAX screen. So, I definitely wanted to see it multiple times in an IMAX format. So that's something that I'm wondering if the third one, I don't think he's going to shoot the third one with IMAX cameras, but
at all.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to do that.
Cause I think that was definitely part of why people ran to see this movie because of the whole IMAX camera thing. Like they were running to go see it in IMAX theaters.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people are not educated about whether something is shot in IMAX. Because you have the same thing with 3D where a lot of people don't know. But if you're like us and you're tuned into this type of stuff, then I think then you did know. But I am interested to see what the story is going to be in the third one because I didn't even think Nolan was going to come back for the third one because I said to myself, there's no way he can top The Dark Knight. But he's come out and said that he has a story and it's a wrap up to this whole, it's the conclusion to his story. It's the third act in his, in his story. So I'm interested to see how that works. Although it could just be him, you know, trying to get a good buzz going before the movie comes out. Cause obviously he's not going to come out and say, yeah, I really don't have any ideas right now, but we're going to make it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We have no idea. Well, you know, based on the ending of the previous film, you would say like they would have had to know where they were going with this third, like with a third film. They would have to know.
When I saw the ending of The Dark Knight, I really said to myself that I said, all right, that's going to be it. They're going to make a third one, but Nolan's not going to be involved. Someone else is going to come in and finish the story or just keep on the franchise going. Cause I said, I think at that point I thought he was going to say, all right, there's nowhere left to go with this. Because even if you do the typical redemption story and then just bring it right back to where it was in the first Batman Begins, then I don't know if that's telling anything. What are you doing new with that? Like, I think Christopher Nolan's the type of person who wants to innovate and tells something that hasn't been told before.
Oh, he definitely does. I mean, you can tell by, you know, his non-Batman films, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
That he definitely is a storyteller and he wants to do something original. But you know something? It's like, in order for him, let's face it, and I think a lot of directors have this problem. It's like, in order to be able to tell your original story that's innovative, that you have to sort of get studios to trust you on, which would be a movie like Inception and Memento and everything, is that you have to do the big budget, you know, Batman movie, you know, mm-hmm. type of movie. You have to be like, yes, here, you know, I'm going to make you money on this franchise, and now let me do my original thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's what they end up I think that happens, you know, with actors too. They're like, okay, I'm going to, you know, like Gwyneth Paltrow isn't, you know, do you think she needs the money from Iron Man? No, but, you know, she's like, all right, I'll make Iron Man 2, get my paycheck, and then I can go make some little movie where they pay me like $10,000, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's similar what happens with directors like Christopher Nolan. You know, it's their way of proving to the studio that they're capable of making money for the studio.
Yeah.
And that's how they get to do what they want. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I would have thought that he'd be crazy if he didn't come back for the third Batman. I mean, like, it just wouldn't make sense. But I really, really hope this doesn't turn into a Spider-Man 3, an X-Men 3, you know, like those kind of films that sucked. So, you know, almost like, you know, I hope he's coming back because he really wants to and not because he feels forced to or feels like, oh, I can't pass it up, you know, things like that. Like, I hope that's not the reason, because I feel like with Spider-Man 3, you can feel the resentment in the film of Sam Raimi. Like, you could feel him being like, I don't want to be here, you know, so mm-hmm. I really hope that's not the case with this third Batman film. So, but I am looking forward to, you know, finding out who else is going to be cast in this film. Like, I think it's going to be, we're going to have a good couple of months coming up with the casting on this film. And unfortunately, that's going to come with tons of rumors because, like we said, there's been rumors since day one. And it's pretty annoying, but I wish they would just, you know, be like, okay, we cast everyone. Here they are. Here's the list, you know, but yeah.
That reminds me of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. There's a scene between Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. They're talking to each other. And he's like, well, I told you, first you got to do the safe picture.
Right.
Then you do the art picture.
Exactly. And that's the truth. That's why it's so funny, because it's based in truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So continuing our news on casting, we had some other big casting news confirmed this week, right?
Yeah. That was Reese Ifans.
Ifans, yeah.
Will be playing the Lizard in the Spider-Man reboot. So that's two, you know, that's a double bit of news there. Not only is he being cast, but they're confirming that the Lizard is the villain in this Spider-Man reboot.
Right, because last week, or a couple of days ago, whatever it was, it was confirmed that he was cast in the film, and then it kind of left everybody to wonder, oh, well, who is he going to be? I think they said he was, I don't know if they said he was going to be a villain or not. Or
yeah, they did.
They did, right? So they said he was going to be a villain, and I think everyone automatically assumed, like, oh, yeah, it's going to be the Lizard. And then, you know, a couple of days later, after the buzz was, you know, all out, they said, yep, it's confirmed he's going to be the Lizard in it. And big, big difference, I think, from Dylan Baker, who played he didn't play the Lizard, but he played Dr. Kirk Connors in the Sam Raimi films.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, if you look, that it's they're very different in the way they look, those two actors. So I feel like sometimes with these movies that are superhero franchise and everything, like, they'll hire someone to be like a really small part. So, like, you know, Dylan Baker was in those movies, but it's like you never could picture him actually becoming like a lead villain in it, like turning into the Lizard. So I guess, you know, now that they're rebooting the franchise, and so but you know, Re:Sci fans, I think of him, I think he was in, what was he in, like Notting Hill or something? Like, he's a quirky British guy, you know, tall, lanky, you know, peculiar. He always plays like a peculiar character. I don't exactly see him as playing like a Spider-Man villain. I'm not picturing it. But then again, I've said it before, with the Spider-Man reboot, I have no idea what they're going for. I feel like I don't get any sense that this reboot is going to be any different from Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. Like, I don't see it yet. I don't see where the difference is going to come in. I mean, they redid the casting, but I'm like, okay, well, I still don't see that much of a difference. So I'm still waiting to see what this reboot is really going to be like.
Mm-hmm. Well, first they said that it was going to be closer to the Ultimate comic books, which are a separate from the regular Marvel universe. And
well, if that's the case, they better bring the Marvel zombies, because they're awesome. Bring it.
I remember that being a rumor, that they were going to make a Marvel zombies movie for really? A long time.
I'll take that. That would be awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, the whole Ultimate universe, for anyone who's not a comic book fan, it was kind of, in 2000, it was a way of telling or bringing the Marvel universe into a current time period. Instead of Spider-Man being a teenager in the 60s, he's a teenager in the current 2000. And everyone else, you know, the X-Men, they made them all teenagers and everything. So it was just a way of kind of updating.
And the Fantastic Four are way less annoying.
Yeah.
Like, they're annoying. I mean, let's face it, in the regular universe, mm-hmm. they are so cheesy. They're so, yeah. Don't even get me started. So, but in the Ultimate universe, they're so much better.
Yeah, like, they're teenagers too. Like, everything was supposed to be to make it more relatable, and so that you wouldn't have to go back and reread, or you wouldn't have to know 40 years of backstory.
Right.
Like, everything was starting fresh. And so that, and the Sam Raimi Spider-Man stuff kind of took some hints or elements from the Ultimate universe as well, but that's what I heard. This new one was supposed to be a lot closer to that. But then when Andrew Garfield was cast, then I heard that they were changing it from he was in high school to now he's in college, because Andrew Garfield is older. But right. So they've been going different ways, and I don't know either which direction
they're
going.
Which doesn't make sense, because Sam Raimi's Peter Parker was in college also.
Yeah, but he started out in high school, though. Like, in the first movie, he was in high school, and then he later went on to college. So I thought, originally it was supposed to be this one, he was in his sophomore year of high school. Like, he was going to be in the middle of high school. And that's what they've done, a lot of the reboots like that. Like, with Ultimate Spider-Man, he started in high school. And to this day, Ultimate Spider-Man is like 10 years old, and he's still in high school. And it's actually still the same year. He hasn't even gone to the next year. But there was a Spectacular Spider-Man animated series, which came out a few years ago, which is on Netflix. Watch Instant, if anyone's interested. That is a really good animated series. But in that, he's a sophomore in high school.
Well,
so
look at the same thing with Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Oh. He's in high school in that series, too.
So that's what I thought they were going to go for with the movie. But also, I've heard it was supposed to be a darker tone than the Sam Raimi Spider-Man. So that was another thing that was supposed to be different.
That would be interesting, because, I mean, like, Spider-Man, I felt that Sam Raimi captured the campiness of, like, just enough campiness of Spider-Man to be like, okay, yes, it's Spider-Man, it's like the comics or whatever, but like updated enough so that you weren't rolling your eyes through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like if they're going to try to make, if every superhero franchise, if the studios are going to try to make them all the Dark Knight, then there's going to be a lot of failures out there, because you know something? Not everything is meant to be the Dark Knight.
That was the same thing that they were talking about with Superman, when they were talking about the Superman reboot, because of the success of The Dark Knight. And you look at Watchmen also, like, everything is going the way of, okay, the dark, and these things go in cycles too. Like, you'll have the dark years of, that'll be what's in vogue, and then, no, we want to return to the lighter, fun times that we had earlier. So it always goes in cycles, but that's what they were saying with the Superman one too. We're going to make Superman a dark character. And then I remember a lot of fan outcry, like, no, Superman is not dark. This is not the essence of that character. So this is another thing where Hollywood finds a trend, and if it's popular or if it makes money, then we see all of these clones coming out of the woodworks, and everything becomes like that one thing that was successful.
Well, look what they did with, well, I'd say that happened with the X-Men franchise, where they started dark, right? Mm-hmm. And then they kind of were like, all right, well, it's a little too dark now and no one's going for it. So let's do Wolverine Origins, and we'll make that, like, you know, like, we'll throw all the humor in, you know, like, they made it, like, not campy, but they tried to infuse, like, a lot of humor, you know. Wolverine one-liners, what have you. Mm-hmm. Like, not as serious a film as the X-Men franchise, as, you know, the original trilogy. Yeah. So, whatever. Justin, they're just going to butcher everything we like anyway. I mean, I'm finding that, like, even if I like a movie, a superhero movie, I tend to, it's like, all right, I like it, but then I tend to just not love it because I just like the source material so much that, you know, I'm like, whatever. I don't need all these movies, really. Like, Iron Man 2, unnecessary, and no thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of the news this week, and I'm sure we'll get tons and tons more casting bullshit rumors and all that other stuff in the coming weeks. But for now, that's our little bit of news this week. So let's talk about the box office. This week, Jackass 3D and Red, the Bruce Willis film. So, Justin, how did those films do at the box office this week?
Well, they both did fairly well, and Red came in number 2 at $20 million, I believe. And the Friday totals, when they first came out, I was really surprised, because the Johnny Knoxville movie broke a record for that first day and for the weekend. Like, they made $20 million the first day on Friday. So already, that right there, and I tweeted this, they made more in one day than Scott Pilgrim made in like 2 or 3 weeks. That was disappointing. So I was really surprised by that. And then over the weekend, they ended up pulling in $50 million. It's really surprising to me, because I did see the movie, and the franchise goes back to 2002 was when the first... Well, if you want to go back to the TV show, that goes back to 2000. So it's been about a decade that we've been seeing these guys hurting themselves for our amusement. Like, I saw someone comment on YouTube that they're done. They have nothing left. But this that first weekend proves that people still like seeing it, and they're still. I think there had been kind of a lull in between the second one and the third one. There'd been a little bit of space, and I don't think the TV shows were as popular, because they had some spinoffs with Wild Boys and some other ones. But this, I guess people were hungry for more stunts and more vile humor, because a lot of it is vomiting, feces, and different type of sexual innuendos, and all these different type of pranks and stunts. So it's a very lowbrow type of humor, but audiences seem to eat it up. It opened in 3,000 theaters, so they opened pretty wide. And each movie has gotten, I was looking back at the franchise, they gave them $5 million budget for the first one, and it ended up making like $76 million. And then the second one made like $80 million. And then, so this one, the budget was a lot higher, but I think it was because of the 3D cameras that used on there. And they actually did use the Avatar cameras.
Oh, God.
And they also used another new camera, the Phantom camera, which shoots at 1,000 frames per second. So they were able to get this really ultra slow motion. And that actually was the best part of the movie for me, was seeing this. These movies are known for their opening and closing sequences being very epic. And then in between, it's kind of like little stunts and pranks. But the highlight of the movie for me was the opening and the closing that they shot in this really super, super, super slow motion.
Right. And
I like that type of thing. And so
I don't know. I feel like I can't even believe that a movie like that, like this is what people are going to see. Like it just, you know, it makes me feel, once again, my faith in humanity is, you know, weakened because of it. I'm like, I don't understand. Like a movie like Let Me In, no one goes to see. Scott Pilgrim, no one goes to see. Jackass 3D, everyone's piling in to see it. And I've seen people on Twitter and Facebook, they're like, went to see it, loved it, love it so much. And I'm like, really? Like, love? Okay, you know. And when I went to the theater this weekend to see Red, I went to like a 5 o'clock showing. When I got out, you figure it's about 7:30 or so, and the theater was packed. Like we could barely get out of the building. That's how packed it was, with just people everywhere. The lines to buy tickets were packed. The lines for the ticket kiosks were packed. And, you know, it was all young kids. And, like, what are they going to see? They're going to see Jackass 3D, you know. So it was really very disheartening. And I went with Dave 3, you know, Geeks of Doom. And he tweeted when we got out of the theater, he wrote, "The throng at the theater to see Jackass 3D has cemented my belief in the prophetic nature of Idiocracy, wherein, ow, my balls, is the number one show." Okay. So it's like, it's moments like this where I think, yep, the movie Idiocracy pretty much nailed it. Like, what our future is to be, where the TV show, you know, ow, my balls, is the number one show. So yeah. That's it.
I don't really think it should come as a surprise, because if we look at our culture that makes stars and celebrities out of people for having sex tapes, like they don't do anything else, but that's where they gain their fame. And then they become actors after that. And
or those
become
reality show people, right? Yeah. People go on reality shows, and what are they doing except being humiliated on national TV?
They become celebrities after that. So I don't think it's a surprise or a shock that this would be popular.
Well, I can't wait until that trend dies out. Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
But yeah, it looks like from the looks of it, we'll be getting another one, although I don't know what else they could do after this, especially after being in 3D. I don't know where they can go after this. But
4D. They're going to go to 4D. Yeah. Where it's going to be like, well, you've never seen Rocky Horror in the theater, but it used to be actually still someplace you can. You go to Rocky Horror, and there are people like acting out the movie, and they're ad-libbing, and they come into the audience and throw confetti, and then, you know, during the scene when it rains, everybody holds up umbrellas and, you know, things like that. And, you know, that's what you're going to have, Jackass 4D, okay, where they come and they hit you in the balls. Whenever, like, someone's being hit in the balls on the screen, they hit you in the balls. See?
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be.
But it's interesting.
Like, when you go to your seat, they'll trip you. You know, like, everyone who goes, there'll be, like, trip wires and everybody will trip.
Nah.
Oh, and when you sit down, there'll be, like, a whoopee cushion on your seat.
Yeah.
Look, I should be a producer on Jackass 4D, man. I got the ideas.
Yeah. But all of these movies have been highly profitable for them, like I said. And it's interesting, each movie they've doubled the budget. The first movie was $5 million, second was $11 million, and this one was $20 million, and each time they've made quite a bit more at the box office as well. So it looks like we're going to get another one of these, and this set the record for October and for fall.
Oh, boy.
So it made two different records all time. So, yeah, $50 million at this time is very interesting. And Red came in at $22.5 million. Social Network came in third at $11 million, bringing its total to $63 million. Secretariat came in fourth at $9.5 million, bringing its total to $27 million. And then Life as We Know It rounded out the top five with another $9 million, bringing their total to $28 million. Actually, okay. The Town has made $80 million so far. That's kind of surprising to me as well. So, yeah, this is an interesting week this week.
What's next week? Paranormal Activity?
Yeah, Paranormal Activity 2, and also Clint Eastwood's Hereafter, which opened in limited release this week. It only made $200,000.
Oh, that's the Matt Damon.
Mm-hmm.
He's a psychic.
Yeah, that one is opening wide next week. But this week in limited release, in 6 locations, what? It made $230,000.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about Red. We both, I think, enjoyed the comic book by Warren Ellis. So let's talk about that movie that came in number 2 this week.
Sure, Eve. As you said, it's based on a comic written by Warren Ellis and drawn by Cully Hamner, who I'm a big fan of. And it was only a 3-issue comic book, so I was wondering how they were going to adapt it to the film. And pretty much they took the bare bones of the plot and the structure and Bruce Willis's character, and then they expanded upon that in the movie, creating new characters and a new scenario. So that was an interesting way to make the movie. But the movie itself, the plot is, it's a bunch of retired spy or secret agents.
And yeah, CIA agents.
Yeah, there's a plot to kill basically Bruce Willis's character first, but then to hunt down and kill. They all get tangled and involved in this web. And then Mary Louise Parker from TV's Weeds, she gets wrapped up in it as well. And her character is in the book is for kind of a microsecond as his kind of handler. But yeah, she has a much larger role and much larger romance in the movie than she does in the comic book. So that's the basic plot, is they're trying to find the CIA is out to kill them, and the government doesn't want them around because they're too dangerous, so they have to fight back. And then there's another kind of evil underlying plot as well.
Yeah, it's like you have Bruce Willis, he's retired from the CIA, and you see him, you know, trying to live a regular life, you know, that's not filled with action and intrigue, and, you know, he's in his bathrobe, and, you know, he's in this big house by himself, and he's lonely, and you know, when his check comes, his pension check comes every whatever it is, week or 2 weeks, whatever, whenever it comes, he calls the pension office, and he gets Mary Louise Parker's character, that's who is his handler for his account, and he'll say to her, oh, the check didn't show up this week, and she's like, all right, I'll get another one sent out to you, and then he uses that as an excuse to just talk to her, like, on a personal level. And so you see this happening over time, and you see them getting to know each other every week, and you see the checks are ripped up, you know, next to him, and you know, she's talking about what book she, you know, is reading and things like that. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, assassins come to his house and they try to kill him. So for most of the film, I think, well, for half the film, you don't know why they're coming to kill him. I don't think you don't find that out till a little later, and then he has to. Like, he doesn't know at first why people are coming after him. And at first he doesn't know who, but then he starts to begin to figure it out. And then he has to go enlist the help of his former co-workers who, you know, have done missions with him and everything. So he goes to Morgan Freeman, who's like in a retirement home. Eventually they go to Helen Mirren's character, it's over the top. Let's face it, it's an over the top story. But it's funny because these characters are supposed to be, they're lethal. Like, it's like you can't mess with them. They were like the best that there were in the CIA.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman says RED stands for retired, extremely dangerous.
Right, exactly. And you see in the film that they totally are extremely dangerous. Like, not only do they know how to work, like, offensively, they know how to go after someone and trap them and kill them, whatever, but they're amazing on defense also. So it was really interesting. Oh, and John Malkovich is in it, and I've said this before on this podcast. I cannot stand John Malkovich. I feel like he ruins every movie he's in. And this is, I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to think back, but I'm pretty sure this is the first time that John Malkovich is in a movie where not only do I not hate him, but I liked his character, and I thought it was definitely a positive attribute to the film. So I was very, very happy about that. But it is a very, you know, improbable, you know, scenario that they set up, and they basically they turn these characters into superheroes, like they're modern day superheroes, like where like it doesn't matter how skilled the other people are, like they can't, like you can't defeat them, you know, and you have to find their vulnerabilities to defeat them because they're just so good. But Carl Urban is also in this film. I thought he was great. He works for the CIA, and he's, like, trying to hunt them down, like Bruce Willis and those characters. He's trying to hunt them down. And, like, so he goes – actually, he goes face-to-face with them a whole bunch of times. And I thought he was fabulous in this movie. I really love Carl Urban, so I was really happy to see him in it. But I thought their confrontations were the best.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like about his character, or I should say his performance, really, because I did like his character overall, but I felt like there were times where he skipped in and out of his accent. Like, cause,
oh, yeah, that happens with so many people. I find that annoying as well, but it happens so often.
Because I was wondering why they just didn't make him Australian or whatever his normal nationality
is. Because he works for the CIA. I don't think the CIA hires... Do they? I don't think they hire.
I have no idea. I don't know anything about the Central Intelligence Agency.
I would think that, you know,
I thought, like, when I first heard him, I thought his character was Australian at first. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. He's, that's nice. They're giving him his normal accent. But then I was like, oh, wait, well, no, he's doing an American accent.
You know what? I mean, it's not worth it to do another take because, look, Sam Worthington got away with it in Avatar.
No!
He slipped in and out of his accent so much in that movie. It's not even funny. Mm. So yeah, I mean, but yeah, I know what you mean. I heard it a little bit, but I don't know. I guess I'm like kind of used to him. It didn't really bother me.
Yeah. But I'm glad you finally came around to the John Malkovich because I like him as an actor. And in this movie in particular, he was my favorite part. His character was my favorite part of the movie. And every time he came on screen, I started laughing. So he was definitely...
Yeah, he had a really good character. Mm-hmm. I love those like paranoid characters who, you know, think the government is out to get them. And I love that.
Yeah. And...
that's what he was like.
You touched on it a little bit earlier, but just on the premise alone, that it's kind of an over-the-top and ridiculous movie that these... geriatrics or I think I was reading somewhere that Mary Louise Parker is the only actor that was under 50 in the main cast.
Oh, really? Well, I have to say when I went to see this, like I said, it was Saturday at 5 p.m. the screening. And so I was waiting online right outside, you know, the theater, whatever, theater number 5. Like, we were waiting online to get in because for some reason, I don't know why, it was taking them, like, extra long to clean. So, like, I don't know, they went over. So, I had to wait on this line. Me and Dave are looking around, we're like, there's a lot of older people on this line. Like, there were the people in front of me were in their 80s. Like, and you know, whenever there's, like, I have to say, whenever I go to a film that, where it seems like, why are there, like, elderly people here? Like, I always listen to their conversations. I'm always like, oh, let's hear where they're at or whatever. And you know what they were saying? Helen Mirren. They were like, oh, Helen Mirren. And I'm looking around and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of people who are, like, in their 70s and 80s on this line going to see this movie. And I thought that was really interesting, and they came because of Helen Mirren. They were like, oh, Helen Mirren movie, gonna go see it, you know? And I don't think that if this movie didn't have Helen Mirren in it, that's first of all. I don't even know, maybe to a certain extent, Morgan Freeman also. But if this wasn't a film about, like you said, geriatric, you know, action stars or whatever. I don't know that it would have made as much money as it did because it had a lot of competition with Jackass, you know, like a younger crowd going to see Jackass. So it's like this movie got people in their 80s out to go to the theater to see it. Mm. So I think that right there is, I mean, how many movies have done that? I don't even know. How many movies have, how many action films, you know, and there's a lot of shooting in this movie. There's a lot of blood in this movie, right? It's not, I mean, there is a lot of action in this film. So, and I didn't see anyone leave either. I looked to see, like, where the elderly people are situated and if they leave, like, because I mentioned this before once. I went to see the third American Pie film, mm-hmm. and there were some elderly people in the theater, and I was like, I think they're in the wrong theater. Like, they don't know. Like, and that movie was particularly vulgar. And, yep, some of them left, you know, like, you know, part of the way through, they were like, I'm out of here. What is this? Oh, you know, so I always wonder if, like, in this movie, I was like, oh, you know, are they going to jump up and be like, oh, I can't take this anymore. Too much violence, you know, but nope. It was, like, pretty packed theater and no one left, so.
Well, I think you are a little off base there because I think more elderly people see these type of movies than you think. Because I go to a lot of movies before noon because they're $5 here, and the large portion of them are elderly people because they don't go to work on Friday morning.
Right.
So a lot of times it's the stars that draw them. Because I remember the earlier this year there was the Mel Gibson movie, mm-hmm. that drew a lot of people. So I think it's,
well, I mean, like I said, I went Saturday, mm-hmm. at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And there was a ton of people there who were over 60, you know, yeah. and who were 70, 80, you know, like they were obviously in their 80s. Mm-hmm. So for them to come out on a Saturday night, and I've told you about my movie theater, right? About how it's like, it's a UA, it's a United Artists, and I call it Club UA because it's like every, it's the only movie theater within like a 20 mile radius. And for an area where there's like a million people within 20 miles, like that's, you know, like we really need another theater, you know? So for, you know, elderly, and it's always, you know, like even though they have this massive parking lot, there's never anywhere to park, you know? So it's like for them to come out at a time like that where it's just packed over there, you know, that says something, that they're getting people like that out on a Saturday night.
Hmm. Yeah. But again, I think we just don't see a lot of the elderly crowd, but I think they're there and they're seeing the movies. But what I was going to say about the over the top and ridiculous nature was, I think this movie might have surpassed Machete for me as the most ridiculous movie of the year. And in particular, there's a shot, and it's in the trailer, which I was disappointed that they put it in the trailer, because when I saw the movie early at an advanced screening, and then I was talking to some of my friends who hadn't seen the movie yet, but they had seen the trailer, because I was trying to describe these ridiculous moments to them, and they're like, oh yeah, that, you mean that point in the trailer where Bruce Willis is spinning in a car and just steps out and starts firing?
That's like the best part. That was an awesome part of the movie.
I laughed out loud when I saw that, and the audience I was with had no reaction. So I felt like
really?
Everyone had seen it in the trailer and they're just like, oh yeah, yeah, we already saw that. But when I saw that the first time, I laughed. I was like, that, like, it was so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's completely different, but I loved it. I loved it so much. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. So, but my audience that I saw it with, again, I saw it at an early press screening, but there was a packed crowd and everyone loved it. Everyone was going crazy at the humor and the action. So, although I had two people next to me that would not shut up the entire movie, this guy next to me thought that everything was awesome and he had to say it verbally. That is awesome. Oh, and then he had to repeat the lines that Mary Louise Parker would say and then say that it was awesome after he repeated the line.
God.
And then he couldn't believe that Ernest Borgnine was still alive. That is awesome. He's like a million years old.
He was doing the commentary, basically.
Yeah, so I had him, and then I had some other guys next to me, but that was disappointing. But the cast in this movie was pretty spectacular. As we mentioned, Bruce Willis, Morgan Freeman, Helen Mirren, and John Malkovich as the main people.
Brian Cox, too, right?
Yeah, he's in it. Richard Dreyfuss, as you said, Carl Urban. And there's a small part by James Remar, who I like. He's done a number of voices on Justice League, and he was in... He took over for Raiden after Christopher Lambert in the Mortal Kombat Annihilation sequel. And he's on Dexter, and he just has this voice that I love. And although in this one, he had some strange southern accent when they went down to the bayou. Mm-hmm. And he had this weird southern accent. But I just love him as an actor. So it was cool to see him. And he's got one of my favorite voices in all of Hollywood. So, yeah, the cast was great. The story itself. Now, did you read the comic before you saw the movie or after?
No, I waited to read it afterwards because I, you know, so many times I go into these films having already read the source material, and for this one, because I hadn't read it, I was like, okay, I'm not going to. Like, I already knew the premise of it, but so I was just like, I don't, you know, I just didn't want to know. I said, let me go in fresh, but I did know that the movie was a lot different than the comic, though, like much more expanded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I read it before I saw the movie, so I had that in my mind when I went in and watched it. And like I said, I think it was interesting what they did, the direction that they chose to go in. Because when I first saw the Bruce Willis stuff where he's trying to be not necessarily a family man, but he's trying to be retired and living in this suburb and have neighbors and things like that, I was like, oh no, they neutered it. They totally turned it into a family comedy, like especially with the music, the score that was underneath
it. That like a do-do-do-do-do kind of, right?
Yeah, I thought I was watching Jingle All the Way or something like that. So at first I was like, oh no, they took this action, this very violent action comic and turned it into something for the masses. But as it went on, it redeemed itself for me because, like at first I was like, oh no, this is not going to turn out very well. But I enjoyed the direction that they took it in. I still like the comic more. And
yeah, the comic is so serious. That's the thing. I mean, I'm almost surprised that they even bothered to adapt the comic as opposed to just, you know, write it from scratch, you know, not even bother, because I don't think they took a lot from the comic. And like I said, the comic was very, very serious. The main character, there's no laughing. There's no one-liner. There's no joke, whatever. Like, it's just such a serious and very straightforward tale. And there's repercussions. And it's very, very different. And then they took the movie. And it is a lighthearted action film. Meanwhile, like, people get killed, shot up left and right, but like it's still like ha ha, you know. And then they get this gang of you know, retirees back together, and they're making all kinds of jokes about how they killed people. I killed people, dearie, you know. And I don't even know. I don't even know why they bothered. Why? And they made it a point in the marketing to be like, Warren Ellis is red, which I think that's really strange. Are they really trying so hard to just be like, look, it's a graphic novel, kiddies, come and see it, you know? Are they really trying that hard to make it like everything is a comic book movie, that they had to adapt something and then basically change almost like 90% of it?
Yeah, but that is, as we talked about earlier in the show, that is what is in vogue right now in Hollywood, is anything that's attached to superheroes. I think, I don't know how well The Losers did earlier this year, but things like that that aren't as well known or high profile as the big Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, those type of franchises, they're really trying to beef up the presence of them being comic books, because they have the DC logo come on at the beginning, and
yeah,
that uh-huh. surprises a lot of people. Actually, that surprised me when I saw it, the preview many, many months ago. I had no idea, and when I saw the DC logo flash on the screen, I was like, oh, okay, here's... I that made me want to go read the comic, actually. Right. It didn't make me want to watch the movie. It made me want to go read the comic.
Yeah, sure.
But
well, I think that's why they will like Warren Ellis, because I think anyone who reads comics knows Warren Ellis. Like, he's a very popular comic book writer, very well respected. Mm-hmm. I think we all, you know, he's a very serious, you know, comic book writer for the most part, you know, except for what he did with I forget that one series he did with during Marvel Civil War that just didn't really work out very well. Mm. But otherwise, he's very serious, and you know, people like him. So I think if you see his name, if they're like, "Yeah, Warren Ellis is red," it's like, you know, that's a flag right there. Up, comic book movie. Go, you know, now everyone could go see it, and people who know comics could tell their friends who don't read comics, hey, go see this movie, it's a comic book movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they got the, like we said, the elderly crowd. So, I mean, they actually had a winning formula for this film, and had it not come out against Jackass 3D, I think it would, I mean, don't you think it would have done a lot better?
This is actually the sequel to The Expendables. Because this is just even older people. So
yeah.
I think this is, they're taking that same concept of the old action people, old people in action roles, and it seems to work well. And yeah, if it hadn't gone up against the apparent juggernaut of people hurting themselves, then it definitely would have won the weekend.
But yeah.
You know, it's interesting. This was directed by Robert Schwentke. Or Schwentke, he's a German director, and he previously did Flight Plan and The Time Traveler's Wife. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you saw either of those, but this seems like a very different movie from either of those. And he's going to be directing the RIPD movie, which right now has Ryan Reynolds attached to it, but there's been some conflict. I heard Ryan Reynolds say he's either going to do Deadpool or he's going to do RIPD. He doesn't know. So. No. Yeah, that's another movie based on a graphic novel, which got me to, when I first heard about it, now I went and bought the comic, and I have yet to read it yet, but he's sticking with these comic adaptations.
Right.
But it's interesting that his career is going this way. He hasn't done too many movies, but yeah. And the guys who, now this is another kind of comic tie-in, the brothers who adapted this for the big screen, they also did the adaptation of Whiteout with Kate Beckinsale. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
I was not a very big fan of Whiteout, and I did like the comic a lot.
The comic was great.
Yeah.
The comic was great.
And
yeah.
So I think it's no surprise that the story in this movie is probably the weakest part, I would say. Because I liked the cast. I liked all their performances. I thought the action was good, the humor was good, but the actual plot and
you know, it gets convoluted. Like in the comic book, it's very straightforward. You know exactly who wants, you know, who's after Bruce Willis, and you know, it's like you don't know specifically why. They're just like, oh, this is a guy who knows too much, and you know, knowing that he was a in the CIA, and he was like a really good agent, and he did a lot of stuff, and like that's enough, you know, for them to be like, he's retired, but you know, he just knows too much, and so that's why, you know. And in this film, you could see it gets really convoluted. Like they go on a mission, because now they have to go on a mission to find out who wants him, Bruce Willis's character, dead, why. And then it's like, it's not just one person, it's like these other orders coming from somewhere else. And then it's sort of like, then there's the twist that wasn't even the twist, you know. And, you know, it just gets really, really convoluted. Like, after a while, I was like, almost like, what? I don't get it, you know.
And you know what?
And, yeah, go ahead.
I didn't feel like they did a very good job of introducing Bruce Willis's character, or at least explaining to you, because when I first saw him, like I had the backstory of the comic in my mind when I went in and watched it, so that informed me about his character. But I thought if I hadn't read the comic, I would have been wondering the whole time, why is he such a good, why is he so good at what he does? Like, I felt like they didn't quite set it up enough to, so that you knew his backstory and you knew that he was, okay, he's their best agent that they've ever had or whatever. So that was one thing. When I was watching it, I said, I don't think they did a very good job, at least in the setup.
Also, I think, like, his character, notice how they try to make it like he was meek, and even when he meets Mary Louise Parker's character, and he's, you know, like, she's scared of him at first, and, like, he's still talking very meekly and softly, mm-hmm. and, oh, don't worry about it. Everything's all right. Like, I'm sorry. I don't think, like, the number one CIA assassin would be that soft-spoken and... You know, oh, I'm so calm, like, I don't know.
That meekness also, I thought, was portrayed in his physical appearance, because after reading the comic where the character is, like, a buff, like, you could believe that he was the top agent, and he was still in fighting form, even though he's retired. Like, you could still, he still kept up. And they tried to put that into the movie where he's boxing in his basement, but I don't know. I've never... Even going back to Die Hard, I've never believed Bruce Willis as an action star. But that, I guess, that was kind of the charm of Die Hard, was that he was an everyman instead of a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger or somebody who's, like, really ripped. But at the same time, to me, that everyman quality made it less believable to me that he would be an action star. So even going back to his younger days, I haven't been the biggest fan of Bruce Willis as an action hero. So in this, seeing him as an old man, as an action hero, that's, it's even, I mean, the whole premise of this is ridiculous, but.
Yeah, it is. It's harder to. Well, you know why? Because you never feel like they're ever in any danger. Like, it's these four or five people, you know, who technically should be ill-equipped, but, you know, they're not, you know, because it's like. It's like a spur of the moment thing, like, oh, danger out of nowhere. Like, they all were in retirement, and then all of a sudden they're all in danger. And but yet, you know, I just thought it was funny that they had that scene where they go out into the woods. It's like a snow covered woods, and Helen Mirren and Mary Louise Parker, like, they have perfect camouflage for those woods. You know, like, the white, they're wearing white with, like, leaf color, like, brown leaf colored splotches on their headgear and on their jackets and pants and everything. And plus, they have, you know, like, more weapons than you could possibly imagine, and no one ever runs out of ammunition, you know, so you never ever feel like, oh yeah, you know, they're all in danger. You always feel like, oh, they'll get away. Or even when they don't get away, you still think they're going to, because that's how they make it seem. Like, it's like they go into, I forget where they were, the was it a banquet or something like that? With Helen Mirren, she's all dressed up in the gown, or they go to, like, this banquet of some kind, and, like, even in Mission Impossible, there's this, in a Mission Impossible film or whatever, like, there's the scene where, like, Tom Cruise has to steal the plans to the banquet so he can see where he's getting in and things like that. And it's like, in this movie, they know exactly how to get in and out. I don't even think they're communicating with each other. Like, I don't even think they have earpieces or anything. And it's like, everything perfectly falls into place like a play.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, right there, it's like, now you're really, really asking us to suspend the disbelief, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to be like, yep, they're badass action, they have good aim, they can shoot you from far away, you know, but it's another thing to be like, okay, they have to whip a plan together in, like, 2 seconds, and it has to work perfectly. And it does, even though they don't know the plans to this place, they don't know the exits and entrances, you know, like, John Malkovich's character just gets in with no problem, you know, and it just, it's very, you really, really, really have to throw your brain out the window and be like, yep, I believe everything I'm being shown on the screen.
Yeah. But that was, as like I was saying, like, Bruce Willis's physical appearance, he felt a lot meeker to me than what I was expecting going into it after reading the comic, where he was such a bigger, physically imposing character. But yeah, I think
he was like playing his character from Unbreakable almost. Mm-hmm. Don't you think his acting was very similar to the Unbreakable character?
Yeah.
Like the way he, but like that character was unbreakable. You know what I mean?
I wonder.
He didn't have to be physically, you know, like he didn't have to be, you know, boisterous or loud or tough or anything, because he had that inherent physical ability. Whereas in this movie, it's like he's an aging CIA agent. You know, he should be like, "Ow, my back!" You know.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of that is his actual personality now, because I've seen him in interviews where he talks that same way. So, but then again, I've seen interviews in his younger days where he was loud and boisterous and different, like totally different. So I don't know. Maybe that's just his personality now.
Yeah. People change over time and they get older sometimes, you know what I mean? Like I've seen that with a lot of, you know, rock bands that I like. I remember, you know, like early interviews with Motley Crue, they were always like, they're loud and they sounded like total morons and they could barely pronounce any words. And, you know, now they're like 50 years old and you hear like Nikki Sixx talking and he totally sounds calm and intelligent and well-spoken and everything. So I think that's probably what happened with, well, you know, prime example would be Madonna, right? Remember the way she used to talk? And now it's like she's like a totally different person. Yeah. So I think that's probably the case with Bruce Willis, where, yeah, it's like he was like his moonlighting character, right, in the beginning. And now he's like that unbreakable character all the time.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen it, but his promotional tour for this movie has been very strange.
Really? Like,
he showed up on Letterman with a meat hat, which was, it was supposed to be a joke about Lady Gaga's meat suit that she wore at the award show, but it was like a hat made of meat. And then I saw him on Ellen and the Ellen DeGeneres talk show, and it was just really, I've watched a lot of Ellen. I record that show every day because I really like it, but that was probably the weirdest interview I've seen in like two or three years of watching Ellen. Like it was the, I don't know how to describe it, but it was just like a bad connection between the interviewer and the interviewee. Mm. And he felt very distant, very cold. And he also felt like he was trying to make jokes that the audience was not laughing at. So it was a very strange interview. Actually, I saw a post online, somebody, I can't remember who it was, which website it was, but somebody actually put all of his promotional clips together. And they're like, what is going on with Bruce Willis's promotional tour for Red?
Yeah, you know, I remember that. I saw the link to that video. I didn't watch it though, but now I gotta watch it.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know if he's is he doing a Joaquin Phoenix? Is this the character that he's playing for the promotional tour, or is there something going on in his life? Like they showed these pictures that he posed for with his new wife, and like he was naked, but she wasn't, and she was sitting on him in a leather suit. I don't even remember what magazine it was for, but that was strange as well. So there's a lot of strange things going on.
He's going through some kind of midlife crisis.
Yeah.
You know? But maybe because he's promoting a movie where he's supposed to be an old guy. And so, you know, I guess he can't take it.
And I wonder how much of Demi and Ashton Kutcher raising his kids and all that. Like, I wonder how much of that, all that is factored into his current state of mind. Actually, my cousin works at a hotel in Hollywood, and I remember him telling me stories about Bruce Willis checking in there. So, I don't know. Maybe it's gone back a couple of years, but yeah. But I do like Bruce Willis as an actor. I've always liked him.
I tend to like him in his movies. Yeah, I tend to like him.
Yeah. But like I said, I just find it hard to see him when it's a physical action role, believing, because to me, he just doesn't look athletic. Like when I have an action hero, I like to believe that they're flexible in shape.
You mean like Danny Glover? Predators 2.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's where, and it always shocks me and blows my mind when people are like, yeah, Danny Glover's a great action hero. I remember when we did that podcast, some people came out to me and said, wait a minute, you didn't like Danny Glover? He was great in that movie. I was like, No, I don't like it when I believe that I'm a better action hero than the person I'm watching. Like, I think I can beat them up. So, yeah. Same thing with Bruce Willis. But I do like him as an actor. And going back to the story or the script, I'm looking at a thing that Warren Ellis, the writer, back in December of last year, he said, I read the Red script. Not bad. Not the book, but not bad. Funny, especially when you know the casting. Very tight piece of work. Talked to the producers last week. They're all kind of giddy over the casting coups. Who wouldn't want to see Helen Mirren with a sniper rifle?
Yeah, well, I went to the Red panel at San Diego Comic-Con, and he was on it, and they were asking him all kinds of questions, like, oh, how you feel about them changing your comic book? He was like, whatever, they paid me. He don't give two shits, you know? He's like, you know, he's always been that way. He's like, whatever, you adapt my shit, just pay me, and, you know, that's it. Like, he doesn't care because he feels like, you know, the comic book is his comic book, and whatever they make from it is a separate entity. He's like the opposite of Alan Moore. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. Alan Moore is like devastated by the, you know, how his works have been masked on film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he won't even take the money. That's what's hysterical with Alan Moore. He won't even take the money. Whereas, you know, Warren Ellis is like, give me the money and do whatever the hell you want. You know, like, you know, it's yours to do on film what you want. So
yeah.
So let's hope there's no Red Part 2, because I think we've seen enough Red, right?
They left it. I think it's, they could do a sequel, like they left it open, but I wouldn't want to see another film in this series.
No.
Kind of like the comic book, where the comic book was 3 issues, and that's pretty much it. There's no sequel to Red, the comic. So that's kind of how I'd like to see this film franchise. So, yeah, an enjoyable action comedy, very ridiculous, over the top. And this is one of those movies that they would say, leave your brain at the door.
Yeah. Or,
yeah,
it was fun though. You weren't disgusted or rolling your eyes and going, "Come on!" You know, it's just like you're rooting. You were rooting for them. You were rooting for them, definitely.
Yeah, and it seems like it would be, you know, because like I just said, I'm the type of person who, in an action movie, if I don't find the leads believable, then it ruins the movie for me. And you would think that Morgan Freeman, John Malkovich, and all of these people being so old, I wouldn't think that they would be believable, but they shot it in a way, and it felt believable to me in a ridiculous way. So I liked that part of it. And Helen Mirren with a sniper rifle was cool as well.
Justin, why don't you tell our listeners where they could find us on the internet?
Well, they can always go to geeksofdoom.com, or they can visit us on Twitter, FlixofDoom, F-L-I-X. Or they can send us an email, flicksofdoom@gmail.com. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, subscribe to us in iTunes so you'll get...
I want to know the concerns.
Well, if they don't like your views, they can tell you. And if they want to subscribe and get our episodes delivered whenever they are released, they can go to iTunes and do that. Or the Zune Marketplace. And they can also leave us a lovely review, please, my friends.
Perhaps we will have our horror movie marathon themed episode next week. So we'll see what happens. Are you going to see Paranormal Activity 2 early? Do you have a screening?
Yeah.
Okay, see, then you could go see it and then tell me if I should go see it. And then we'll see if I go.
Sure, Eve.
Sure, Justin. Justin, why are you trying to kill me? I hate that word. Stop saying it.
I'm recording.
Good for you.
That's you.
Me?
Yeah.
Why me?
That's it.
Very good.